When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hey everybody, welcome, and thank you for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. My name is Zach, I'm here with Laura, and we're here today with Stan Tatkin. Stan is one of the giants in the couples therapy world, and Laura and I got to spend some time just asking him questions, picking his brain a little bit. He has a brand new book that's called In Each Other's Care, which is a great guide to the most common relationship conflicts and how to work through them. His better known book, though, is a book called Wired for Love. If you haven't picked them up or seen them, I cannot recommend them enough. Stan's brain is fascinating. He really thinks deeply about not just couples relationships, but how they fit into the larger scope of what it means to be a human and on the planet. I was fascinated by talking with him. I think you will be too. This is a very cool conversation. Stick around.
I really want to know what interests you, what lights you up, other than a book that you probably published or started writing years ago, and now we're talking about it. But I'm wondering what lights you up now? What has hold of you?
Yeah. What do you do for fun?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Two different yeah. questions. What lights me up? Literally right now, I'm on a binge watch of The Great.
Okay.
Which is a Hulu comedy about Catherine the Great. And what I love about it is the relationship. So if anybody has seen The Great, you'll probably know what okay. I mean. The relationship between Catherine the Great and her husband.
Okay, so right we have to ask this. We're all therapists, right, in the room. And I told Zach, actually, that I really enjoy watching trashy reality television because it's dramatic and I don't have to do anything about it. And it's almost so dramatic. Like the reality TV is so far from reality. And then I start watching other dramas where the reality is so much closer to what we're seeing in our office that my brain can't shut down. So I'm wondering, like, do you compartmentalize where you're like, okay, my therapy brain's over here. I'm going to watch this for enjoyment. I'm just wondering, what is watching TV and relationships do for you?
I don't like watching, you know, therapy shows, reality therapy shows, even though there's one or two I hear are really good. I am a romantic. And the reason I like this show is because it is goofy and bawdy, even raunchy, but it's extremely romantic. And so, you know, I my work is not romantic, but I am that. otherwise, I probably wouldn't love working with couples. Mm-hmm.
So, what do you mean your work isn't romantic? Well, how do you differentiate?
I see my work is much more disciplined and much more about purpose, purpose-centered relationships, not relationships based on love or romance or emotion or feeling. I am very big on that, but I don't believe that can actually happen in the long run unless there's structure, organization, and a sense of shared purpose and meaning for the couple beyond emotion and feeling. So in that sense, you know, I am not a romantic.
Wow.
Right on.
Wow.
But when I do see it work, I'm very excited.
So do you have a practice where you see couples? You do. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's part of the problem is I'm working 7 days a week these days and I'm in the chair like the two of you, I'm sure, you know, all the time. And I would love to cut back on my practice. I just have a hard time saying no.
Yeah.
I do find that it's, go ahead, Zach.
Well, let's just talk about your practice for a second, because you founded, created this thing called PACT, which I would love to hear you describe, particularly most of the people who listen to us, we're both certified Gottman therapists. So you probably have a juxtaposition that you understand in kind of the sort of the popular modalities, but I'd love to hear you talk about PACT, particularly as it juxtaposes to other styles that are maybe out there.
But by the way, John was an early mentor of mine. Yes. I took his training long ago, and then he became a wonderful colleague well. And so
he's
a
good dude.
I love his work. Yeah, he's a great dude. Yes. So, what was the question again?
Well, how did tell me about PACT, particularly relative to like? I mean, how do you describe it to people as in terms of how you would differentiate it, perhaps from other modalities that are out on the in the marketplace or in the world?
Yeah. Well, under the hood, between us chickens, this is a psychobiological approach, meaning that we study infant brain development and brain development throughout the lifespan. So this is a developmental model based on infant attachment studies, adult attachment studies, but also the development of the autonomic nervous system from prenatal through 18 months critical period, and developmental neuroscience, in particular social emotional networks that determine what people can and cannot do. So this originally was looked at as a science-based, research-based approach, looking at, originally was a deficit model, but because that doesn't sound very good in the general population, we changed it to a capacity model. But a neuroscience deficit isn't used as a pejorative. It's used in terms of what the brain can and cannot do, especially in the social emotional area. And so that's still part of what PACT is, part of what we look at. The approach, however, is polytheoretical. So we draw from social justice theory, trance, light trance, a la Ericksonian, on family systems. It's very structural and very strategic. Psychodrama, we do a lot of psychodramatic work. And as I said, attachment, arousal regulation strategies, and neuroscience. So we draw from a lot. It's a complicated, a lot of moving parts approach, which takes some time to really integrate. But then it's fun. And we have one goal and one goal only, and that is to corral, seduce, push the couple towards secure functioning in this lifetime or the next.
Okay.
And secure functioning, I can tell you about.
I'd love to hear about secure functioning, but let me ask maybe a more practical question, which is who is the ideal couple or client for like this approach that, as far as you know, is it anyone or is it a specific, like we're struggling with X. And so PACT is the direction for us.
Well, originally because of my background, in personality disorders and object relations, you know, psychoanalytic work, this was built from the ground up to deal with the most difficult, couples. So, here we're talking about people who are neurodiverse, people with trauma, people who have unresolved trauma, and we might think of them as disorganized, disoriented folk, and people with disorders of the self. But we especially enjoy people that are psychoneurotic, and that don't have these challenges, right? But that's what it was built for. It's built for the most challenging.
Wow. I've always really appreciated when I hear an elevator pitch from another therapist of what is your ideal client? And they say, I want the most challenging couples you can send to me. And I just really respect that. I typically don't work with the most challenging couples. So that would be, it's nice to have another avenue. Well,
I will say personally, as I get older, as I've done this for a long time and post COVID, because COVID changed me and probably you too, is that I no longer want to work with people who don't want to be there. I don't have the patience any longer for people who aren't interested and don't want to collaborate. So I would say that's not the ideal couple for me or partners for me. In the old days, I would teach my students, you know, in PACT, we don't fire couples. We do our job and allow ourselves to be fired. And we're always their couple therapist until they say, no, we're not. But I've changed over the years. And I think, again, COVID did a lot for me, also getting older, that that if people aren't really wanting, if they're not in enough pain, because pain is the great change agent, if they're not in any pain, they're not going to be collaborative or cooperative. And getting a therapeutic alliance, as you know, is essential for success. And so so I like to weed those people.
Yeah. So you alluded a little bit to secure functioning. That's the goal, is to get couples to that space. Can you describe what that is, where that comes from, where that language comes from? Just so I, and this, by the way, is not the first time our audience will be hearing this, because we did a whole deep dive into another book that you wrote. But for those who haven't heard about secure functioning.
Well, firstly, thank you for doing another deep dive into another book. Thank you. Secure functioning is not the same as secure attachment. A secure attachment is based on a research model, is a subjective and can be objectively determined state. A consistent state of security or insecurity in one's primary attachment relationships. So that is different. That's a state, right? Whereas secure functioning is a set of social contracts. These are agreements. This is sets the stage for secure attachment to happen, for development to move forward by lowering interpersonal stress, which is not only a killer, but is the single most reason why development stalls. So so it's organized around the idea that in a fair and free union among adults, where it's a symmetrical relationship, the relationship, if it's to be long-lasting and happy, it has to be based on principles of fairness, justice, and mutual sensitivity on an ongoing basis. Fully collaborative, fully cooperative, even under stress. And that's where it's difficult to do. Under stress, we revert to a one-person psychological system of I, me, mine, and you, 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 whereas secure functioning is a two-person psychological system, much like a potato sack race. If you were in a potato sack race, you have to work together or you don't win.
So you're saying secure functioning, even when under stress, you can be especially under stress. Okay.
Yes.
You mentioned these agreements. I think it was agreements that you said, and my brain immediately went to, what are the agreements? Tell them to me. I want to make sure that I am fully aware of them. Is it a list of agreements or conversations that you have with your partner ahead of time?
Think of it this way. The two of you, I know you're not partners. You are partners, but you're not romantic partners. But if you were, you would probably make up the only kind of unit that does not organize around a shared purpose or a shared vision. It would be around emotion, love. It would be, we're hot for each other. We seem perfect. We want vaguely the same things. But we don't come to the table as visionaries, as co-architects of what this thing called a relationship is. We forget that relationship is an abstraction. It's something we make up in our heads. And if you and I or the two of you don't have the same idea in mind, you will fight. Or worse, if you don't shape this thing called your relationship like you would a block of clay, and shape it to your desires today, not when you were children, not your family of origin, but your culture that you're co-creating. If you don't do that in any world involving human primates, that's trouble, mm-hmm. right? We're operating something that's only half built, and because we're human beings, under stress especially, we tend to do what we want when we want to. Mm-hmm. We're not guided by principles.
Another way of saying that is it that people who end up in romantic relationships, they do it sort of unlike any other relationship that they choose. They just sort of unlike do it on instinct other. Or gut or, you know, hormonal attraction. And until they organize around something that looks like intention and purpose, yes. then they're going to yes. be in, they're going to be in tension.
Like any civilization that involved different people, the only way to get people on board and to behave in a manner that is civilized, that won't hurt each other, is to have a shared sense of why we are doing mm-hmm. this, where we are going, not just in the big picture, but in all the little small pictures as well. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, our differences become highlighted and we start to over-focus on how we're different and how we disagree mm-hmm. rather than where we are the same and how we do agree, which has been done since the beginning. Yeah. Of our species,
yeah,
grouping together.
I have a friend who likes to argue that agreement is the most powerful force on earth. Like we agree that bell bottoms are cool, so they're cool, and you know we agree that relationships work in X kind of way, so they work in X kind of way. But absent agreement, that's where all of this sort of tension and argument comes from.
Right. We're animals. And I think by now, if we've studied, our human history and looked around and see how we behave today, it doesn't matter where we are in the world, human beings are wonderful, but we can be very selfish and self-centered and impulsive and fickle and moody and opportunistic and xenophobic. We otherize. And unless we work together in a manner that is focused and mutual, good for me and good for you, we'll start to accrue threat memory, a biology, a memory that begins to grow exponentially if it's not repaired quickly. Mm-hmm. So this is where we get into the psychobiology part. Mm-hmm. The manner in which you and I interact when one or both of us is under stress is likely to be unfriendly.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. It's definitely unfriendly. I was just telling Zach about a very unfriendly moment when I was under stress with my husband, but I said, I'm proud of myself because I repaired quickly and it only took me 30 minutes to calm down. Yay for me.
My wife and I have an agreement. We can go to bed angry mm-hmm. together, but we have to at least touch toes.
Aww.
And you'd be surprised how hard that can be sometimes to do, but mm-hmm. It always works. Oh. And it serves actually an important existential threat, because when our primary attachment relationships are in disrepair, when there's a breach of any kind, there's a part of us that actually frets over whether the relationship will exist. And that causes a tremendous wear and tear on the brain and the body.
Wow. Which is,
and so it's in our best interest. I can say, I hate you, but we're okay. Mm-hmm. That last part, we're okay, is the minimal but necessary mm-hmm. part that allows us to be resourced again.
Yeah. Do you remember
transactional
analysis?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm okay, you're okay was the whole piece of that puzzle. So
yeah. Eric Byrne.
You're aiming at I'm okay, you're okay.
Yeah.
Well, we're okay. So if we were to take a look at secure functioning and boil it down to a formula, the formula would be, I have to consider you at the same time I'm considering myself. I have to think of your fears and concerns and interests at the same time I'm thinking of mine, or you will start to protect your interests. Mm-hmm. In other words, if I only talk about in a manner that suggests I only care about my fears, my concerns, my interests, whether I'm right, it forces you, compels you to do the same. And this is part of the human condition. It's part of what gets us into wars and lawsuits and people breaking up and families, cutting off, is this tendency for us to pick up threat and react to it very, very quickly in a way that looks threatening to the other person. And so this has been my research. We studied this by watching hundreds and hundreds of hours of video of couples in digital video watching by frame analysis, faces, changes in the face, in blood flow, in movement, muscle tension, vocal control, all of this. And it's quite astounding what we are doing all the time without knowing it, because real time is actually too fast. Mm-hmm. It's too fast for the areas of our brain that are thinking critically. We're mostly using lightning fast recognition patterns, pattern recognition as we move through our day automatically. Mm-hmm. And so that part of the brain shoots first and asks questions later.
Mm-hmm. So what does it look like actual for couples in the room? Like, given that it's lightning fast and you're trying to collect data or whatever, like what do you offer or how do you direct traffic right there in the room that they can take home and work with? Like, I guess I'm asking for the practical piece of the theory at this point.
Yeah. So, because we're wired as human primates to interactively regulate our autonomic nervous systems by being at relatively close distance. It has to do with our visual system in our eyes. Mm. So we have to be face-to-face and eye-to-eye in order to co-regulate properly. That's also with exciting experiences, sympathetic exciting experiences, and parasympathetic low experiences of pleasure or pain. So our couples are mostly turned towards each other in dealing with each other. The therapist often will create a container, basically a task that is center stage that is actually happening. So you and Laura are arguing, let's say, about bedtime for the kids. Mm-hmm. I may ask, do you have a policy for this? Or is this anything goes? No, we don't have a policy. And I might say, okay, I'm going to give you 10 minutes. I'd like you to come up with a policy for now that works for the two of you. So you only have 10 minutes or less. I want to see how you can work as a team and collaborate and come up with the best possible solution for now that you're both happy with. And that's how we begin to work in these small containers toward moving them, educating them towards secure functioning, working together as a team, a union, as allies. And this everyone can do. Mm-hmm. Most everybody can do. But as you can imagine, people are going to run into a lot of resistance and a lot of issues around justice, around memory, around their ideas about how relationships should work. And so it's a bit by bit reorienting towards that idea of a potato sack race. Or if I were in some universe allowed to bind the two of your legs together, the inner legs, for a month, you would get the idea of what this culture of interdependence is. Mm-hmm. You'd have to work together or you wouldn't work. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now I'm interested in all of the resistances that come up. And I'm sort of framing this in the theory that I'm grounded in, I understand, which is where I'm, Zach, you tell me if you're here too, the idea of dreams within conflict when it comes to Gottman method. The idea of I'm holding on, you mentioned, right? Like to this dream so tightly and I'm unwilling for you because I'm afraid to be hurt. I'm afraid of the pain and I can't give in to you and give you your wants and your needs because I'm too concerned about my own wants and needs. So that's where I'm thinking, okay, here we are. We're trying to solve a problem, come up with an agreement and we're butting heads in some of these areas, experiencing resistance. What do you do then when the couple is unable to, securely function with one another?
Well, they are able to, but there are things in the way. Okay. And it could be, again, a built up threat memory that keeps on giving, which makes everything more difficult. Because now I remember what you have done and how I've been hurt. You probably repeated it a lot, so there's lots of inflammation. And that's getting in the way, too, because I think, well, I don't trust you anymore. Then you don't trust me anymore because of what I've done to protect myself. Mm. So we have to understand that Whenever I protect myself, I don't know what my face is doing. I don't know what my voice is doing, my gestures. I don't know my word choice, the effect it's having on you, probably because I'm not even looking. Mm-hmm. And this is, again, the human condition. Welcome to being human. Mm-hmm. This is everybody. And yet, we assume that a union that is creating things, children, a home, right? Whatever, you know, we do together, we're creating things, and we're supposed to be executives, generals. Mm. We're supposed to be good problem solvers. You and I can't problem solve if we focus on each other as the problem. Mm. We don't, right? So first is reorienting people, work the problem, mm-hmm. not each other, because mm-hmm. that's war.
Okay.
That's war. So it's in people's best interest because they want relief. They also sometimes want their justice, mm-hmm. but they want relief and they do want to stick together. That's the beauty of the attachment biology. Mm-hmm. It's the I can't quit you biology mm-hmm. that we misinterpret as love, but it isn't. It's an existential matter. Mm. But that's fine. We'll use that. And people don't want to quit each other. And so I think the pain that they're going through and everybody wants out of pain, having a direction and a way to get out of pain that actually is good for both of them, definitely eventually wins. Mm. But it is a challenge for the therapist to set these containers up, mm-hmm. to explain why this is happening and why they're in such pain. Most of the time, it's self-harming. Mm. So if I do something to you, if I win at your cost, I will pay for it in a two-person psychological system. Mm-hmm. If I'm in a one-person system, I don't care. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's self-harming for me not to care because I'm going to care very soon because paybacks are hell. Mm-hmm. Right? There's nothing I can do. Think of the potato sack race. There's nothing I can do that affects you that won't affect me in return.
Right.
Therefore, it's dumb. Dumb, right? It's dumb to think win-lose. It has to be win-win or we won't last.
Right.
Or we could last, but we'll probably want to keep our eyes open at night. So this has been around since the beginning of civilization. Mm. How do people of different stripes, how do they get along? Well, first, religion. God will smite you. Mm. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not do all these things. That was a way of controlling society because people were doing all these terrible things.
Sure. Mm. It's a common
Same
purpose,
laws.
Common
so,
meaning. Yes. Right. Yeah.
So we need structure. Yeah. We need limits. You and I need limits so we don't harm each other, even by accident, which is going to happen.
Yeah.
So this idea of we're in it to win it, that it's you and I against the world, that we are the most important people in the world because everybody else depends on us being okay. So organizationally, we put our relationship at the top mm. of the list. We come first before anything and everyone else. That doesn't mean our kids get locked in a garage. It means that everyone depends on you and I being good.
Right.
That we're resourced and we're okay. Otherwise, everything else and everyone else suffers. Mm. So again, this is a very practical way of thinking. From a pact approach, we know this is difficult. Mm. And we know we're going to run across things that people may have a hard time doing for various reasons, sometimes developmental delays. We know this.
Yeah. Mm.
If we don't have the expectation of what will work, they won't do it. So we have to hold to this idea as the only system that can last a long time, last forever, and be happy as well. Nothing else can work because it ends up being too unfair and too unjust and too insensitive too much of the time.
Hey gang, I'm back for another trip. This time I went to Asia. It was amazing. I was in Seoul, Korea, which is massive and fun and exciting. I can't wait to tell you all about it on a future episode, but I will tell you that upon returning home, I had the exact same experience, which was I could not wait to get back in my bed again. And it's because of my Cozy Earth sheets. These sheets are fascinating. I don't know how they do it. When you're hot, they cool you down. When you're cold, they warm you up. They're temperature regulating. I'm not kidding you. I love these sheets. You know who else loves these sheets? Is Oprah. Cozy Earth was featured on Oprah's Favorite Things. And another thing that's really exciting about my new sheets is that I got more of them for Father's Day. I do hope that you'll check them out. Cozy Earth also has loungewear, which offers optimal comfort while maintaining a flattering, elegant fit. All the products at Cozy Earth are made from responsibly sourced viscose from bamboo, and they come with a 10-year warranty. Cozy Earth offers premium bath products also made from viscose from bamboo, and they offer a plus collection as well as their new waffle collection. So I don't know, maybe you have a cool gift-giving opportunity coming up, maybe your own anniversary or a birthday. Maybe your kid just graduated from high school and needs some nice sheets to go to college with. Cozy Earth has provided an exclusive offer for our listeners today, 35% off site-wise when you use the code MTR. So if you're in need of new sheets or loungewear, or you need bath products, swing by CozyEarth.com, use the code MTR, you'll get 35% off, and I promise you won't be disappointed. Let's get back to our show. So I have two questions. One is one of maybe practical, but the other is more existential. But I think I've heard you say a couple of times, like, people can do this.
Yeah.
Like, this is a thing that they can do. They maybe they just forget, or they have too much resistance, or they, and so part of what PACT is designed to do is help them go, hey, you know how to do this already. We're just going to remind you and point you in the right directions. But now this is the existential question. What is love? Like, what does love have to do with all of it? I mean, if we're sort of going, hey, love is actually not the organizing system, like, but what, where does it fit for you? I mean, you clearly love your wife, and you guys are,
I adore my wife, and I'm in love with my wife, but this has been earned.
Okay.
I believe in earned love, earned respect, earned value, earned appreciation, gratitude. Most people in love, first of all, nature doesn't care about relationship. We do. Nature cares about continuation of the species.
Right.
So in the beginning, love is whatever we're prepared to think of, but it definitely is, you know, let's do something to continue the species, right? Mm-hmm. That's the nature part of it.
Interesting.
Attachment, like I said, gets confused with love because it involves feelings of love, warmth, cared for, safety, security, all of that's attached to feelings of love. Mm-hmm. But the at the bottom of it, the attachment biology has nothing to do with love. It's, it has to do with the primitive survival, going back to if mommy dies, I die. Mm-hmm. It is extremely primitive. And so, so it is existential. It's not love. Earned love is what we do, not what we say, not how we feel. You and I decide to, what's the best thing we could do in this or that instance? So say we both. We've vetted it. We've talked about it like legislators. What's the best thing we could do, even though it could be, probably will be the hardest thing to do? That's where we're talking here. Mm. If we leave it up to our nature, we will sometimes do good things, and if we don't feel like doing good things, or we're angry, if I don't like you, bets off. Mm. So we need something greater than ourselves to aspire to, principles that we co-create, that we want, and we agree, that's the cooperation part, we're going to follow through when reminded, because our lives depend on sticking to the principles we set, because we know the damage we can actually do if we allow our feelings to guide us.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
It makes me wonder how much these principles need to be reevaluated in a lifetime. I think we had Zach
constantly. Yeah.
We had a gentleman on, oh gosh, I'm going to forget his name, but I think he said that we were on a 3-year cycle. Do you remember that, Zach? The gentleman from LA, the producer that we were talking to?
Yeah. Roger Nygaard. Yeah.
Yes. Was it a 3-year cycle?
He said basically that romantic relationships are designed to last about 3 years. And this came from a documentary that he was putting together, but
four.
Okay.
You say four? What is that?
The cultural and biological anthropologists, this is what the conventional wisdom in the wild. Remember, in the wild, and you know, a long, long time ago, we didn't live very long anyway. Mm-hmm. But we would pair bond 4 years, which theoretically is long enough to provide shelter and safety for an infant, a mm-hmm. child. And then we either die or we move on. Again, nature, mixing up the gene pool is part of our nature as well. Not just monogamy.
Mm. Yeah.
Monogamy is more of a social construct than it is a biology. for us. Mm-hmm. And so that's in the wild. The 4 years is set there because of some calculus that suggests that that was the average.
Yeah.
That people would stick together, mm-hmm. stick together without going off into other groups.
Yeah.
And you see this in other areas of the mammalian world as well.
Mm-hmm. Right? Just a constant conversation, reset, discussion of what are the agreements, what's working for us. And we talk about, like you had mentioned, my agreement with the way that who I work with as a client changed after COVID. That was a shift in who you yes. were as a human yeah. being, and therefore a new agreement or a new decision needed to be made in what you're willing to work with. Okay. I'm getting this. Yeah. I want to be respectful of your vacation time with your lover. I also really want to tell our listeners about your book, and I want to understand how you, because this book is written in a unique way from yes. other books that you've written. Can you describe sort of like what was your thought process when it came to why you wanted to put this into text format and put it in the hands of couples? What is it going to do for couples? How are they going to move through it? What are they going to learn from reading this book?
Well, this one actually didn't take very long to write. It was fun. Different. Let's divide it up into common complaints that I see in my clinic.
Yeah.
And apply to the two things that I have been obsessed with in the past few years, because PACT has constantly been one obsession after another as I over-focus on things and develop them, and then I go on to something else.
Yeah.
And the two obsessions, which the book is really about, is there are two things that are going to crash and burn any union in a free society. One is a lack of shared mission, shared mm-hmm. purpose, mm-hmm. shared values, and shared vision. Where mm-hmm. are we going and why? That's just true of all human groupings, right?
Yeah.
As soon as we lack a vision, shared vision, we start infighting. As soon as we don't have a shared purpose, people leave or they do bad things. Mm. So this is just the way of the world and the human world. The second greatest, and they're on par with each other, is the manner in which we will interact when one or both of us is under stress. Mm-hmm. And this has to do with our biology and our neurobiology. It's not you. It's not me. It's not bad. It's not good. It's not a pathology. That's the human condition.
Right.
Yeah.
It is the features and bugs of our brain that actually cause us to make incredible errors in communication, memory, and perception, leading us to think that we're right all the time, and we're not. Mm-hmm. Hardly ever right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it's a myth.
it's a myth. It's a myth. Yes, by our own brain. And so it's really a repetition of these two important ideas. You've not created policies. You're not creating any legislation that would create a co-constructed culture of what we're going to do and what we're never going to do. Mm-hmm. So say us both. Mm-hmm. We're in charge. Yeah. We're in charge. And that has to be fresh and constant, that right. we constantly look ahead, predict, plan, and prepare for what could go wrong, which is something we don't do as well, but we can do it. Mm-hmm. And then also workshopping, learning how to maintain safety and security at all times by working in a manner that is good for me and good for you mm-hmm. at all times. Mm-hmm. Very hard to do, but that is what, you know, if it's easy, it's probably not worth much.
Yeah.
But that's what's worth it. That's what leads to character. That's what leads to feeling good about oneself. I did the right thing, even though it was the hardest thing to do. Mm. And that's what we're posing, is that we use the mind we've been given to create something bigger than ourselves that we adhere to. I'm not obeying you. I'm obeying the principles that we both drank the Kool-Aid on and agreed to, because we believe that's the best life.
Yeah. Is it fair to say that with the second principle of being able to create safety when the stress is going to encounter, because we're going to encounter it, is it fair to say that it would be helpful for folks to, if they haven't read Wired for Love, to read Wired for Love?
Yeah.
It feels like that would be a really good deep dive in how to create safety, is to read that book.
Wired for Love or Listen to Your Brain on Love. I think both of those were around the time when I was obsessed with islands, anchors, and waves, and airplanes and submarines, and the stuff I'm talking about that makes it difficult, primitives and ambassadors, stuff that makes it difficult for us to get along.
Yeah. It's funny. I have actually a book club that I lead, and it's just for therapists. And literally all we do is we read the books that our clients are saying, hey, I read this really great book. And it started with yours because I kept having people talk about these anchors, these waves. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? I don't know what this language is. And so we started picking up the books that our clients were reading, and that's the entire book club. And so we just keep reading. We're 2 or 3 years into it now.
I simply changed the language of the clinical terms, because the clinical terms sometimes are a little unfriendly, like angry resistant. Who wants to be angry resistant?
Absolutely.
What are you reading, Stan? When you're on vacation, what do you read? Do you read for pleasure?
I don't.
He's watching TV.
TV. I watch my great shows, Succession and The Great Two right now, I recommend. But I do read, I'm a nerd. I read a lot of science articles, journals, and I'm currently reading papers that people send to me that they want me to read.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Well, and I'm busy writing, a revision, the next edition of Wired for Love.
Woohoo. Well, that's wonderful.
Thank you.
That's great. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you both.
We have been actually trying to get you on the podcast for several years because you are one of our top gentlemen that we just really honor and appreciate and love to follow your work. And it's been incredibly impactful for the folks that we speak to and also our clients. But so I appreciate you taking the time from your Kauai vacation with your lover to spend time with us.
My lover.
Your lover.
Yes,
she is. And we're living proof, by the way. I do apply this in my life, as hard as it is, but I do. So. Yeah.
Congratulations. Thank you. And for sure, go enjoy the rest of your vacation. I hope that you're not working too much.
Thank you. And I know you're traveling, or one of you is traveling right now. So travel safely.
Thank you so much. All right, Stan, go enjoy your afternoon. Thank you for joining us.
Before we leave you, Stan, how do people find you? How do we find out more about your work? We got In Each Other's Care, which is on the bookshelves now, but what else?
You can go to thepactinstitute.com. And if you're in the mental health field, you want to be trained in a psychobiological approach, you can find us there. Also, Tracy and I do couples workshops throughout the year online, and we do retreats. We have one coming up in Portugal next year.
That information on the PACT website?
That everything's there. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Now you can officially go and enjoy your vacation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. Huge thank you to Stan Tatkin. We have already had an episode where we talked all about Wired for Love. That is one of his other books. The book that has most recently come out is called In Each Other's Care. And you can find out more about Stan by joining his website, thepactinstitute.com. I'm really excited to learn more about what he and his wife are offering for couples as far as couples workshops. So check that out. Thanks for all of your time and attention, making your relationship better today than it was yesterday.